Welcome to Nice Ashes. I'm Mike.
And I'm Nate. And this episode of Nice Ashes, we're participating in the third annual Podcast-thon, which is a collaborative effort. This year, it's over 1,500 podcasts are joining in, and we dedicate an episode. Each one of those podcasts dedicates an episode to a nonprofit or charity that they want to highlight. And so this episode, we are highlighting Roger Up, and we've got the founder, CEO, Zach Johnson on with us here. Say hello, Zach.
Hey, everybody. Thank you for having me. Appreciate you guys.
Thank you for being on. And what are we smoking this episode with Zach, Mike?
So we are smoking a cigar that is very popular right now. It is the Deadwood Cigar Crazy Alice, which I believe is a Drew Estates product.
Yes. And this one looks weird.
Yes, it is a, well, 4-inch torpedo, or a triangle, I'm sorry, triangle or pyramid, and it's flavored, of course, and should be short and sweet. What are you pairing your cigar with, Nate?
Oh, I am pairing mine with a Kona Big Wave. How about you? Either of you.
Whatever. I'm going with a cup of coffee because it's been a long day.
There you go. That works, too.
There we go. I thought about coffee, but it's too late for me to drink coffee. So I have the Summit Nihilus Irish Dark NA.
Oh, okay.
So, good choices.
Yeah.
All right. So this one has a pigtail. Do we just pop this one off or do we cut it, Mike?
I would say rip it off, or you can cut it if you have a little tiny cutter. Doesn't matter.
Yeah, I gave mine a cut.
Yep. The cap is sweet.
It's definitely got a beautiful fragrance to it.
Interesting. The second puff, I had a little bit of harshness.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
I'm getting pretty much all good things. It is a very different shape for a cigar.
I'm kind of digging the uniqueness to it. It's just shape and everything to it.
Yeah.
This is definitely the most aggressive torpedo-shaped, or not torpedo, I keep on saying that, pyramid-shaped cigar that I've ever smoked. I've had a few Charus that were a similar overall shape to this, but not this.
Okay.
Aggressive, right? It's 3/4 of an inch on one side and 1/4 inch on the other. So it's pretty stiff taper.
Yeah, it looks almost like one of those little, I don't know, communion candles or something where you go and everybody lights off of the other one, you know?
Yeah. It is similar.
All right. Well, we're very glad to have you on, Zach. And you, your company and nonprofit is Roger Up. Do you want to tell us a little bit about that?
Yeah, absolutely. So by day, I do have a paid job. I work for the Disabled American Veterans. So I get to help out with disability claims, benefits, resources, and that's the job that keeps food on the table and the bills paid. Back in 2016, I came up with the idea for Roger Up, and that was just because of the things that I had been through with the VA healthcare system, the benefits side of things, and just really feeling the need to do away with a lot of red tape that I was seeing. So we became accredited with the state of Minnesota in 2018, and that's where our logo comes into play with the establishment date. And then we got our 501c3 status back in July of 2023, and we went full bore September 1st of 2023 with a website, with programming, with team members, any and everything other than the merchandise line. And it's been an absolute whirlwind. It's been such a blessing. Now to date, in 18 months, we have raised $240,000, which is unheard of, and I am so proud of my team. So what Roger Up does is we take veterans, first responders, and their families on all access paid outdoor adventures with an emphasis on mental health. So what we try to do is have a licensed psychologist or a mental health professional that comes out on our trips with us. And that's whether we are hunting, fishing, camping, backpacking, dog sledding, snowmobiling, doing all kinds of fun activities for both abled and disabled bodies. And we try to have mental health sessions if we can during those things. But mainly what our bread and butter is paying for a lot of those short-term and mental health care needs. Some people have been through the VA system and it's just not it for them. And they need something that's, you know, maybe just an outside the box approach to it. Maybe it's utilizing equine assisted therapy. Maybe it's using service animals. Maybe it's EMDR rapid eye movement therapy or personal training needs, dietary needs. Maybe people are looking at getting back into their faith. And it's just really a one shoe doesn't fit all approach to mental health. So we do have a faith and fitness team. We have a women's engagement coordinator for women's specific resources and activities or outreach events. And then we just have a fantastic team all around to help out with mental health needs. So 14 of us, 15 of us now, I suppose. And we are all volunteers. We don't have any paid staff. And then I'm also very proud that on top of the work and the not-for-profit, I am a full-time student at St. Cloud State University. I'm getting my master's degree as a clinical mental health counselor, which is going to allow me to better serve our community on a more individual basis through the organization.
Awesome.
Yeah, it's been a lot of fun so far. We've had some amazing experiences between the different rodeos we go to, being at the Duluth Air Show, which we are going again this year. The Blue Angels will be there. And so we have a booth set up for that weekend. And just a lot of other fun activities. We already have two pheasant hunts planned, a memorial goose hunt for a veteran who passed away last year. Their family reached out to us to ask for help to do a fundraiser. And so it's just going to be an incredible summer. You know, it's always the winter months are the calm before the storm. And we really start to ramp up. For turkey season, we already have a turkey hunt planned for April, and then it's just gangbusters all summer.
That's great. I didn't know that you did all the additional therapies. I went quick and looked you up, and I found hunting with veterans, but I didn't know you did all the other stuff. That's pretty great.
Yeah. No, it's wonderful. It's just to be able to really kind of, and we keep evolving it because we have people that come to us and they ask for, you know, just different things. Hey, do you guys do this? Do you do this? And I mean, hey, I need a resource for this. Well, if somebody needs a resource for fixing a vehicle or paying for, you know, bills that they may be behind on that they don't have the financial means, you know, we try to exhaust all current, you know, accessibility, whether it be through their county, through Health and Human Services, through other not-for-profit organizations that have, you know, some seniority to us, say like the American Legion, the VFW, the DAV, or other local, you know, agencies that may be available that have the funding. And if we've exhausted all those angles, then we actually have paid to fix vehicles for veterans. We have paid for getting people caught up on their mortgages, getting people caught up on their electricity bill, water bill, whatever it may be, utilities. We just want people, the term Roger Up, I guess, is the best way to describe it is when I was in Iraq and Afghanistan, mainly in Afghanistan, a lot of the times we would always go out there after we did our morning review of what the mission brief is going to be. Hey, this is the plan of the day. This is where we're going. This is how things need to be. We need to be mindful of, you know, enemy activity. And then I would always go out there. We'd go to the vehicles if we were mounted and we'd say all vehicles, Roger Up. And what that meant is your food, your water, your weapons systems, your serialized gear, your personnel, your communication systems, the trucks, is everything good to go, squared away, so that we have the ability to go get in the fight for days on end if need be. And so then now what it means to me is, are you okay? Are you okay with your personal life, your marital status, your child care, your child issues? Are you okay with financial? Are you employed? Are you underemployed? Are you, you know, are you looking for a new career? Is your disability stuff okay? You know, we want to make sure that everything is squared away so they are rogered up to where they are living the epitome of life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness.
That's excellent.
That's awesome.
Yeah, the work is unbelievably fulfilling. I can't tell you how many times that, you know, we have people that come to us and just in tears and saying, thank you. I don't know what I would have done without you guys. And it's an amazing feeling to know that, you know, they're very prideful group of individuals with the veterans and the first responders, whether it's male or female, very, very prideful group. So for them to ask for help takes a lot. And And it isn't easy. I dealt with the same thing coming back from Afghanistan. It was a stressful deployment. I hit a 150 to 200 pound IED. It killed one of my Marines, and my driver and I were medevaced. And so it took me a long time to ask for help myself. And now I feel like I've weathered that storm, and now it's time to give back as much as possible to help others to heal, because we don't want to have any more suicides. Our statistic rate is too high, and whatever Roger Up can help do to combat those 22, 23 veterans that are committing suicide every day, along with our first responders who have taken their own lives. These are not easy jobs, and we acknowledge that, and we want to make sure that we are the front line for defense to help them.
Yeah, for sure. Zach, I was curious on how do most veterans find you, or is it more of their family members finding you on their behalf? I know when we talked before the show, you said it's also the program is also for family members of veterans, or the whole families of veterans.
Yep, absolutely. And a lot of times the best way to get a hold of us is always just to go to the website. I mean, you know, when we're out and about, we leave a lot of our handouts at VFW's American Legions. We go to, we are in support of the 800 first responders through the Hennepin County Sheriff's Department. And that includes the dispatchers, the corrections officers, the deputies, the patrolmen. All of those 800 employees are supported in the peer support team that Roger Up supports. And so our goal is to really try to keep connecting with all fire departments, all police departments, EMTs, corrections officers, getting the word out there about the organization, the programs that we have, the fact that we try to take care of every bit of expense, so none of that is incurred by the veteran, the first responder, or the family member. And so really, going to the RogerUp.org website is always the first way to go about it. They can go through the website, whether they want to volunteer, whether they want to purchase clothing, or whether they truly just need support. It's all on the website. We have a Facebook page also, as well as an Instagram. So at Instagram is RogerUp2018, which is our establishment year. And then with our Facebook, we're growing. We're over 2,200 followers right now. We're proud of that. And wow, it's just growing at a really, really great rate. And so the word is getting out there little bit by little bit, but every piece helps, because a lot of people are not going to ask for help until they hear about what we're doing. And I know what we're doing is changing lives. I've seen it firsthand.
Yeah, for sure. How many people at a time do you typically assist or help?
Yeah. Right now we're about 45 to 60 veterans, first responders, and family members on a monthly basis. So it's a good number. I mean, there are some days that it's gangbusters and it's 30 phone calls in a day. Sure. So these are more or less being case managed, if you will, because they have multiple things. They have a housing issue, they have financial issues, they have disability claim issues. And then, yeah, it's just about each individual. And the part that I love the most about the work is when I sit here and have these conversations with these individuals, everybody's story is so very different, whether it's a soldier, a sailor, a Marine, an airman, spaceman, you know, any of these, because we've got to include the Space Force now. They're there and we love them. And, you know, we want to make sure that they're included in this conversation. And so to be able to hear the different stories about how did you serve? Where did you serve? When did you serve? You know, what branch were you in? What did you do for a job while you were in? There's so many similarities, but so many differences that make up the military in the United States. And the same thing with the first responders. They all have been on some extremely, incredibly heroic events or calls. And whether it's saving lives or preventing, you know, mass casualty, there's just so many different stories to it. And, you know, unfortunately, then mental health comes right in tow with that, because you can't sit there and go through discharging your firearm. Or in one of our team members' cases, there was somebody who took their own life right in front of them. Very sad. You know, you're working day in, day out, and, you know, you got to go back to the shop. You got to go through, you know, the process of filling out all your paperwork, and then you're supposed to go home like it's okay. And truth of the matter is, you just had one of the most stressful days of your life, and you're supposed to go home like it's a job.
Yeah, very, very instances that are very traumatic or potentially very traumatic. Not like getting an angry email from your boss, traumatic, but
right, you know, exactly. That's, yeah, you can deal with that.
Yeah, different kind of traumatic than maybe most of the American population would realize. I did see for our listeners, the last time they pulled these statistics in 2023, there are 15.8 million veterans in the United States, which is about 6.1% of the civilian population, 18 and older.
Yeah, and we have a little under 300,000 veterans in Minnesota. And coincidentally, the majority of our veteran population in Minnesota is Vietnam veterans. We have a high density. I want to say it's 56 or 58% of all veterans in Minnesota are Vietnam vets. So high density there. And then also of our entire veteran population, we have, I think it's 8.9. And I have the pictures on there. I don't want to close out of this and lose the feed, but
sure.
I do have some of those. The Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs actually just put out its numbers a couple weeks ago for census to know how many we have. But yeah, that's where we want to make sure we're capturing all the different demographics that we have. And the only ones that we won't help are dishonorable discharges, because usually there is something from a legal standpoint that falls in line with that. We won't help any felony sex offenders or felony aggressive, who have been found guilty. So whether it's, murder or assault or things like that.
Yeah.
So
but otherwise, makes sense.
We want to make sure we're trying to help everybody. We understand that even some of those who are discharged characterized as general under honorable conditions or other than honorable, there may be something that's with theirs that maybe was unfair, and we need to take a look at that to see if their character of discharge can't be changed. I actually have two veterans right now that I'm working with on just that, and one of them has a situation where she was married, and it was unfortunate because she was forced into a situation where her husband at the time, while she was in, forced her to use, marijuana and alcohol, and it ended up causing her to pop on a urinary analysis, which is a no-go in the military. And because of her situation being forced into that because of certain things, it's really sad. And you're going, well, the Department of the Air Force is reviewing it right now. And so fingers crossed that she comes out of this with an honorable discharge and gets to continue on her road, because she's at school right now for criminal justice. And she is kicking butt at life right now, being a single mom.
Well, that's great. I had no idea you could contest or you could change those statuses.
They're very difficult, very difficult. But it is something you can always take a look at. But there has to be some good ground behind it. It's not just because, well, I felt it was unfair. Well, I'm sure you did. But truth of the matter is, this is what you did while you were in, and you got cowboy up to that or cowgirl up to that. That's just what it is.
Yeah. And there's also some administration stuff too, right? Like, there could potentially be an issue where the person did nothing wrong and their superior was vindictive, or I'm sure that's very far and few between, but I've seen enough episodes of MASH to know that.
It is. And there, there's times where, it goes on all angles, going up the ranks or going down the ranks in certain instances. And, the sad part about it is, the part that breaks my heart is probably 96-98% of all women that I help through the DAV and through Roger Up are military sexual trauma survivors. And so there's definitely a very high percentage in the military. And, we are going to do everything in our power to make sure that with Roger Up, that when we have our women specific retreats, we're doing things to help them to recover from some of that. And it never goes away completely. None of our traumas do, but we want to give them some peace of mind to know that, we're going to be here and we're going to be supportive of them.
Sure, yeah.
And you guys can feel free to ask any questions. I'm an open book. You want to know about, so I'm a Purple Heart recipient. You want to hear that story? Whatever you guys want to talk about, I'll talk about it.
Yeah, Mike, do you have anything? Otherwise, I'm down to hear the Purple Heart story.
I'm definitely down to hear a Purple Heart story.
it's not that glorious. I definitely wasn't crawling up Iwo Jima like some of the World War II guys and who were Medal of Honor recipients. So on April 2nd, 2010, I was in the Helmand province of Afghanistan, and we were building a SWA hut, 20 foot by 40 foot building structure. And I had my whole section out there. So I had 8 combat engineers and I had 8 infantry guys, and we were building this thing. And about 4 o'clock in the afternoon, we got a call that our explosive ordnance disposal team needed to go out. So I called QRF, which means quick reaction force. My guys drop their tools, they go running, they grab their gear. And there was another unit in the neighboring area of operation that had been hit by an IED. Lead vehicle got hit, passenger broke a leg, and everybody was okay. No KIA, killed in action, none in that situation. And so we loaded up the trucks after we got the report on it, told the OD, talked to them about where we're going. And so we escort the explosive ordnance disposal team up there. And so I'm in the lead vehicle. I got the explosive ordnance disposal team behind me and then 2 of my other trucks. Now I'm skinned. I'm down 2 Marines because I had to send them down to Dwyer to pick up concertina wire because our commanding officer had a freaking hard on for putting up force protection and getting more C wire around the outside. We're in a huge mansion in the middle of a damn desert. We don't need any more freaking C wire up there. It was just ridiculous. So either way, we head up to 605 and we cross into 3rd Battalion, 10th Marines area of operation. They're an artillery unit. We pass their front gate, give them a wave, whatever, and then we head down a no-name road. It's not named on any of the maps. So we head down there and we come down and there's a fork in the road. And in the fork in the road, I'm sitting on there on 2 forms of communication. I'm communicating with the other team, or the other guys were communicating with 3rd Battalion, 10th Marines, making sure we're trying to figure out kind of where we're supposed to be going. We're looking at our Blue Force trackers, the computer screen in front of us. So kind of got a lot going on. Well, we stopped at this fork in the road because I'm going, well, I know they're on like the other side of this house, but which way do I go, left or right, to get there? Now, the area that we're in that we had just driven into, the guy who is on the FBI most wanted list for terrorists, he's number 10 on that list. This is his area. This is where he's at.
Okay.
And even like right before we get hit, I'm watching motorcycles go away, and the driver of our vehicle, Brian Thompson, goes, "Dude, the hair on the back of my neck standing up right now." And I said, "All right." And I said to Corporal Curtis Michael Swenson, he's Lance Corporal at the time, I said, "Hey, Swen, get down." So he's up in the turret, he gets down a little bit, and Thompson and I are doing that. Well, I can see fresh tracks to the left-hand side. And so what I'd come to find out is the team that had gotten hit, they started to go left, they backed their trucks up, and they ended up going right. So when they went to that right side, they got hit by an IED. We went down the left side, boom, we get hit by our IED, and it was a big boy. And so we flew. It split the mine rollers, cold rolled steel, cottering pins were still hooked in, cut through that, rolled the mine rollers forward. We flew about 20 feet in the air, landed on our back, rolled over backwards. So Swenson was killed. And then Thompson smashed his face on the steering wheel, bit through the end of his tongue, traumatic brain injury. I hit my head on the Blue Force tracker, broke all 4 screws, took the computer off the freaking mount. And we had just put our seatbelts on because we were in one of the brand new MATVs. And when Thompson said, "My hairs are standing up on the back of my neck," I said, "Hey, seatbelts on." And so we started putting our stuff on. And literally, I remember looking down, I'm putting this last one in, click, I looked up. Boom, spray came up over the front of the vehicle, and then I'm lights out. And then my understanding is I was unconscious for about 3 to 5 minutes, and that was the time it took for them to get up towards the vehicle because they had to break out metal detectors, get them warmed up, sweep all the way up to us to make sure there weren't any secondaries. And then I had to have the other only, because I only had two other up guns, so I had to have them mounted either way. So they had to have 180 degrees on each one of them, because we didn't have a third gun on the EOD truck, because again, I was missing two guys, but we still need to go out. So we went out with less than the minimum. We were supposed to, you're supposed to have basically three per vehicle. So I should have had 12 and I had 11. Well, we got sent out anyways, because what are they going to say? No, you can't. So, and then, yep. And then after that, when I came to, my face was bleeding and I got a puddle of blood underneath me, which is on the ceiling because the vehicle is now upside down. And so my rifle's wedged in the door. I can't get it out. So I ended up crawling out and they called in what we call a 9-line. 9-line is for getting the medevac going. And so they call in 9-line, they called in 2 KIA, and only one of, well, they only thought I was the only survivor. Brian Thompson comes out second, but yeah, we were freaking screaming our heads off for Swenson and there was no response there. And as soon as they pulled us back to the EOD truck, I pulled a camera out of my flag jacket. I handed it to one of our guys. I just said, I don't know what's telling me this right now, but I need somebody to start taking pictures because I know I'm concussed right now. And I got a picture of me covered in blood and I look like I'm a deer in the headlights. And so ripped open my chin, traumatic brain injury, level 3 concussion, vertigo, migraines. I've got tinnitus, bilateral hearing loss. I got my trapezius muscles, both service connected, whiplash in my neck. My C6 and my L4 vertebrae are offset. My hips are twisted and offset. Bilateral damage to both knees, left ankle, broken tendon, left foot got banged up. And then just from other deployment stuff, respiratory, digestive issues. And then I got the mental health that goes with all of it. But I joke around all the time. The moneymaker is still good. I can still close a deal. I can still close a deal, if you will. And, you know, I know that my purpose on this planet is Roger up and to be here. And the work that I do is to honor Corporal Curtis Michael Swenson, to honor his family, his mom and dad, their Gold Star family. They live in Rochester, Minnesota, Kay and Dave Swenson. The work that I do honors their family, their son's legacy. And it motivates me to get my butt up every morning to make sure that I am here to help others, and there's good days and bad days like everybody else. And there's days I don't want to get up, but I'm reminded that Curtis paid the ultimate sacrifice for this great nation. And that if I don't get out of bed, I'm doing him a disservice and I'm disrespecting him. So it's good motivation to get up every day to do the work that we're doing. And, but yeah, we got medevaced out. We did. It was kind of funny. Because we're standing at the back of the vehicles. They moved us all the way to the back of the fourth vehicle or something at that time, I think. And all of a sudden, we see some guy walking up in front of a bunch of trucks. And we go, oh, who's this jackass? And, well, that'd be a full bird colonel. So not exactly a jackass. He's a heavy brass, heavy, you know, officer level 6. He's one before a 1-star general. So yeah, he's command some weight. And he's like, he comes up to us, why the fuck aren't the birds on station yet? Oh, good afternoon, sir. Yeah. Well, sir, they said air is 6 hours out. Bullshit. Give me that fucking horn. All right. Yes, sir. And freaking handed him. He goes, break, 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 all channels, clear AO. This is Oscar 6. And we're just like, dude, this dude just laid his shit on the table. And yeah, my goodness, like, unbelievable. You just like, you're like, dang, dude, that's what freaking heavy brass brings to the table. And all of a sudden, bang, 2 Blackhawks are on the deck. We got 2 more gunships on station that are doing circles around us, making sure that everything's good. And, there, I didn't have a care in the world at that point. So, and so they put myself and Thompson on 1 Blackhawk. And then a good buddy of mine, him and one other person carried Swenson's body, put him on the other Blackhawk. We flew out. They flew us to Bastogne, which is the British side, and got stitched up over there. And yeah, and then we were there when we got cleared. They flew us back out, and we were back out on a mission 8 days after the event. So April 10th, I went back out of the mission. My hand was absolutely shaking, but even my commanding officer was like, well, you can be the corporal of the guard. We'll give you a set of keys and a radio, and you can go open doors, or else we could send you back to Germany and send you home. And it was, I know you're not supposed to cuss at an officer, but I said, sir, there's no fucking way. I said, my section needs me. I got to get back on this horse, and they need to see that we can live through the worst of it, and we can still stand tall and we can get back up and get back in the fight. And so after that meeting was over with the commanding officer and the higher level enlisted, we're walking out, and my Master Sergeant E8, Master Sergeant John Grimsley, comes over, puts me in a headlock, and he goes, "God damn, devil dog, you motivate the shit out of me, but if I hear you talk like that again, we're going to have a real problem." So, note to self, it was your one get out of jail free card to cuss towards an officer, and you're not cussing at him. You're not supposed to swear at all around them. And I screwed up on that one, but at the same time, I kind of wanted to make my point. So, yep. And then they put me back out in VIC 3. And so I was no longer allowed to be in lead vehicle anymore. I finished the deployment and we came back and we honored Kurt.
That's a heck of a story for sure.
Like I said, it's a blessing to be here. I mean, Iraq, we got shot at 11 times, mostly snipers. We got mortared and RPG'd 5 times. And again, it's a blessing to be able to talk about it, because I've seen the dead Iraqis. I've seen the dead Afghanis. I've seen dead children. That's probably still my hardest thing that I've seen, is a dead child and the story behind that. But all of it builds me into somebody where I can go do keynote speakings. I can do a podcast like this. I'm not clammy. I have the ability to talk about it. And, you know, it's I'm a firm believer that, you know, there is a brighter day if you put in the time, effort, and energy to work on yourself, whether it's needing to, you know, some people need to go to treatment. Some people just need mental health help. Some people just need a break from life. But ultimately, there is things to look forward to, opportunities out there, and life's been pretty incredible these last couple of years, and a lot of that I attest to my faith. Read the Bible for the first time, audiobook cover to cover, and have just really put that at the forefront, and that has opened up every single piece to my life that if I put faith first, if I listen and adhere to the word, it's moving mountains in my life. It's unbelievable.
Yeah, that's great. Nate, are you still there?
Yeah, I'm here. I just...
Okay.
big story, you know.
Little
different than, very, other things. And
very intense story.
Oh, yeah. I was just going to say, I think what's... I don't want to say nice, but I think with the newer generation of soldiers, military, dispatchers, correction officers, all of those roles, right? Mm-hmm. My grandfather was a World War II vet, didn't talk about anything except, nothing, you know, a monkey.
They never
they picked,
did.
Except like a monkey they picked up off an island, and it lived on the ship for a while. Right. But you never heard anything, you know, and that doesn't, I mean, that's their generation. They didn't have the mental health or the really helping in any other way at the forefront of their thing. It wasn't part of society. It wasn't part of the culture. And to have the younger generation or this new generation, I suppose we're not the youngest generation anymore, but whatever. But to have people that can go through something like that and talk about it freely and help other people who have gone through similar things, you know, you just don't hear a lot of that older generation that had, you know, that told stories of their time. No. It was just something they did, and it was their duty, and then they came back. And
well, that's how it was. I mean, even, you know, the DAV, the Disabled American Veterans, has now been around. This is our centennial year. We've been around for 100 years. So you think 1925, you know, what was just coming to an end? World War One, right?
Yeah.
You know, or you got kind of that time frame, and you got even just before that, you got the Veterans of Foreign Wars that's at about, I think they're at about 104 years now, and the American Legion's just like right neck and neck with them. And you're going, okay, you got these old school three organizations that have been around since World War One. They went through World War Two, but you know what? What you did is, hey, you've been having a tough time since you got home. Hey, come down to the American Legion. Grab a beer with us. Grab a steak. Well, you know what? Some of the guys in our generation and in the culture that's in the barracks is frat boy, you know, let's pound beers and, you know, drink ourselves stupid. Well, that's not going to work for everybody who may struggle with that.
Yeah.
So how do we get them out to things where you can go out ice fishing and you know, it may not be as fun as you think it used to be because you pounded blackberry brandy and beers, but that's okay. You can still go out and ice fish and enjoy your time out there catching fish and enjoying these experiences, because if you're not spending money every week at the bar, well, now your fishing experiences can be a little bit more expensive, maybe, where you can go on these trips. Or, hey, get plugged into the different ones. I mean, between Memories Made Outdoors, Take a Vet Fishing, Fishing for Life. I mean, I can sit here, Hometown Heroes Outdoors, Mandatory Fun Outdoors. I can go on and on and on about these outdoor organizations that do this kind of stuff. So you can jam-pack your entire hunting season going through organization almost. And you know what? There are people like myself that love to go out, love to be in the community, raise the money to give these experiences to other people. Because I will tell you, when they are done with that hunt, that fishing trip, the smiles on their faces, the memories they had from it, I mean, they're ear to ear. And you just know, you're like, that's all natural endorphin. It's all it is. It's just pure joy. You know, the World War II guys, I mean, my grandfather, World War II Navy, and doing his history, come to find out he's on the USS Curtis. And that's always given me goosebumps that Curtis was my Marine who ended up getting killed, how there was that little correlation in there. But, you know, come to find out, oh, yeah, we heard a story the one time. Oh, yeah, I had a kamikaze hit our hospital. Okay, I start doing the history of the USS Curtis. Come to find out, it was part of Pearl Harbor. You know, I don't know if he was the ship that was in Pearl Harbor, if he was outside where they had docked, you know, the majority of the fleet, because they knew something might have been coming. But yeah, it was just really cool to know that, like, you know, I am carrying the torch of, like, the next generation to serve, because, you know, got a lot of people where, you know, freedom of speech and freedom, a lot of things is, you know, at the forefront of a lot of battles here that we have on our own soil. And whether you lean one way or another way, it's important. It's irrelevant to us with Roger Up. If you need help and you're a good person, we're going to help you. But yeah, those World War II guys, it was their duty to go serve. It was their duty to go to World War I or World War II. And it was their duty to just, you just came back and you just sucked it up and dealt with it, because they are the greatest generation. They are the hardest, you know, what's that, you know, ever walked yeah, our soils. So I have so much respect for them, and very proud that my grandfather served. I'm very proud to have the honor of gotten to meet Herschel Woody Williams, Iwo Jima, Medal of Honor recipient. One of my prized possessions is I have an autographed Roger Up board that I had just was kind of coming up with things, and he signed the Roger Up board with our logo and tagline and everything. And I also got a picture of him with President Harry Truman and his warrant from his Medal of Honor. And I mean, little 5'4" guy, and he went hand to hand and, you know, took down, I don't know how many different Japanese guys hand to hand. And then also took a flamethrower and took out a bunch of pillboxes that had, you know, guns shooting at them. This is one of the, I mean, his Medal of Honor story is next level, and he deserves every bit of it. But the fact that I got to, the day after the Super Bowl was here in Minnesota, I got to go down to the VFW in Minneapolis, and I was only one of six people sitting at the table, and I got to have lunch sitting across from him. And he's a United States Marine also. So, like, he's this, you could have me in front of, you know, I don't know, name an actor, an actress, I whatever. Okay, cool. Put me in front of him, I turn into a stuttering little, I don't even know what. I was just stammering. I could hardly get my words out. I'm so excited to be sitting there. It was so fun.
That's awesome.
So you said your grandfather served, what branch was he in?
Yeah, he was technically Merchant Marine.
Nice.
So he operated all the guns on the ships, and he was off the beach of Normandy, and then he was stationed off of Okinawa right before the bombs dropped. And the one thing he did tell us, because we had an aunt that was pretty far on the spectrum the other way. Mm-hmm. not mm-hmm. that Mike and I are, and you know, we're not Republican or Democrat, really, or me, I'm not going to talk for Mike, but we've had plenty of other political episodes where we're kind of like not pro one side or the other, but she was very liberal and trying to get into a argument with him about how dropping the bombs on Japan was a bad thing. And
I bet that was fun.
That's something you don't really do with a World War II vet anywhere, especially one that was stationed off the ship, you know, off the shore of Japan when it happened. And he told us that his commanding officer came and got everybody assembled and said, you know, if you have any last things you want to do or any last things you want to say on this earth, like, now is the time, because we're going to launch our invasion, and a lot of us aren't coming back. And then they dropped the bombs and they all came back. So,
yeah. And it's, you know, it's, I'll tell you, I mean, I didn't go in until I was 23 years old. So I was actually one of the old men you know, in there. But, you know, to see some of these 16, 17, 18 year old men, and we're all sitting in the room together, and you are writing your life insurance policy. You're writing your will at 18 years old. You know, for me at 23, that is a different feeling of how real this is. The sacrifice that could be made is I signed, you know, 13 or so pieces of paper to join the United States Marine Corps. And then now I'm sitting here writing my life insurance policy because this could very well happen. This could be real.
Yeah.
And we got lucky. We got lucky that those days in Iraq that, you know, the sniper wasn't dialed in. Because I swear there's a couple times where that bullet, I heard the crack and boy, it had to be in, have been within 3 feet of me.
Yep.
So that's a different feeling to know that somebody's staring at you in a crosshair, pull the trigger and, well, God bless it. He wasn't dialed in that day.
Well, and I think you can be against the war, you can be against the administration, you can be against war in general, but don't be against our veterans.
And that's where I'm at with it. And that's where, you know, I have to maintain, you know, keeping my own political beliefs out of the work that we do, because I have people that have come, you know, up to me and tried to engage me in that. And I catch it right away and I don't allow it. And I go to a school that's extremely liberal. And there are times where maybe once in a while, the professors may try to bait you, and that's, you just have to, you know, people do that to others. I don't understand it, why they want to pick an argument. If we want to sit and have a conversation, sit and let's have a constructive conversation together. We don't have to agree on things, and that's the beautiful part about this country, is we can agree to disagree. Doesn't mean I hate you, doesn't mean I you know, there's no animosity, but it's a sad state that we're in that we can't have some of those conversations, that we need to scream our heads off instead.
Yeah, it's unfortunate that a lot of our, let's say, societal conversations mirror a lot of the nightly news conversations, where it's, you've got these talking heads yelling at one another and interrupting one another, and, you know, it's like that's not how we should be modeling discussions and conversations in our culture and society. You know, people can have different opinions. Studies have come back, and somebody that has a different opinion than you doesn't actually harm you. It's crazy.
What a concept. What a concept. Well, any other questions you guys have about military life or Roger Up or anything else?
I did have a question, actually, which I didn't want to interrupt. Are you involved with the veteran hunting events at Camp Ripley?
So the last one wasn't Roger Up. I actually go up there on behalf of the DAV. So when they have that disabled vets hunt, whether it is they got the turkey hunt that's coming up here in the next month. So I should be up there for that, but that's on behalf of the DAV. We go up to that, and then there's trolling for troops in June, and then they do the disabled vets deer hunt there. They also do a disabled vets deer hunt down in Rochester. The DAV is great when it comes to outdoor adventures. So anybody can go on to the DAV of Minnesota website. There are opportunities that are on there to go fishing down in Florida, hog hunting in Texas, fishing up on Lake of the Woods or northern Minnesota. And so again, if you want to get outdoors, there are so many ways to do it simply by just signing up. For those who are combat wounded, you've got, you know, Wounded Warriors in Action, which is a phenomenal organization. And they are national. They've got chapters all over the country for Purple Heart recipients. If there's anybody else who, you know, just needs to get out, there's plenty of ways to do it. But it's fun to go up to there. And even last time I was up there, all I did was I rode with a Marine, and she and I went out to go pick up a vet who is in his tracks wheelchair. And he gets out there and he backs up the tracks wheelchair. And there's a hoist thing on this whole trailer. This thing is so cool. And then it like automatically lowers him down. He wheels himself out, wheels himself over, gets in the truck. We take his Trax wheelchair, we bring it to the back and put it up on there, strap it down and everything. And it's like, just to be up there to volunteer, just to do what you can to help out, is just such a great time. And there's some big deer that come off of Ripley. Holy cow, I saw a picture of one. It was a 12 pointer. That was early in the bow season, but like this deer was huge.
Yeah, they have some bruisers out there for sure. Yeah, some impressive animals.
Yeah, yeah, even the bear out there, pretty good size too.
Oh yeah, well they're not molested for the majority of the year, so
exactly.
They can generally grow and live that base is massive when you look at it on the map. So
yeah. Well, when you start driving the roads, if you don't have a map with you, it's very easy to get lost. Been there, done that. So, because I actually did some training up there. So when I got back, I wasn't ready to put down my uniform. So I actually joined the MWSS 471, the Marine Corps Reserve Unit, down in Fort Snelling. And our second training was sleeping in World War I tents in the middle of the snow at Camp Ripley. Yeah, I didn't last long there. Yeah, I'm going, you guys were fighting wars in Iraq and Afghanistan. Why are we sleeping in the snow in February? This doesn't work for me.
Yeah, I worked for the Boy Scouts, and I'm an Eagle Scout and been in the Boy Scouts for a long time. And we always would do the scouting event out at Fort Ripley. So we slept in the barracks and ate MREs and things like that. But we weren't getting shelled or shot at or, you know, blown up. So there was that. But the lack of privacy around the toilets was a little traumatizing for, you know, like a 12-year-old. But other than that, one of my coworkers was, when I was working for the Scouts, was an Iraq veteran. And he came back and just never got back used to the Minnesota winters. He was like forever, his body was like forever changed. Like he couldn't handle the cold anymore. So he always had layers and layers and layers.
Yeah, I've actually got a team member right now where she's literally sat here and talked to us. I'm like, oh yeah, I don't know how many years I'm lasting here. It's too cold for me. I can't do these. And again, it does. It's because you know, you tweaked it. You hear these guys, oh yeah, you know, wow, you're limping today. You okay? Oh yeah, you know, old football injury from high school. That old football injury, just like those old rickety, you know, issues with your knees, your back, whatever, those can turn into arthritis after 30, 40 years. So when that starts to happen, the cold is not your friend.
Yeah. So I feel like we kind of missed our mid-cigar check because there was an intense story happening, but we can do a cigar check now. I've only got about an inch left. Where is everyone else
so
at?
I put mine down for a bit and let mine go out. So, when I'm caffeinated, I can turn into Chatty Cathy. I know that about myself.
Where are you at, Mike?
I'm at about an inch also.
Okay.
So was it a pretty deep, I mean, that's so about an hour. That's a pretty decent burn.
Yeah. It actually lasted longer than I thought given its size, but it does start out a lot girthier than it is at the end. So, you know.
Yes.
Yep.
So, it was sweet. It wasn't as flavored as I thought it was going to be.
Yeah, it was sweet, but not as sweet as like a factory sweets or even, the factory sweets are just kind of a general sweet. But this is less sweet than that. I liked it. It's getting a little sour here at the last inch, I've found, but I liked it.
Yeah, and I kind of expected that because now it's down to maybe a quarter inch and an inch long, and it's got a lot of tar buildup.
Yeah.
Yeah, I suppose it's that cone shape almost.
Yeah. Well, I guess let's, Mike and Zach, we can give our ratings on this one, and then we'll do a couple things to wrap up. So I don't know if you've smoked enough of it, Zach, to give it a rating or not. We go on a 5-point scale. If it was like the best thing ever, if it was like better than Sex Cigar, that's cake, then you can give it above a 5. But
for me, probably I would say like 3.2. Definitely above average, but I wouldn't say it's the tops for me.
Sure. What about you, Mike?
I would give it a 3.
Okay.
I would give it a 3. It's fine. It's a medium-bodied cigar, and it's got a light, sweet flavor, but I don't understand why they're so popular, other than they look really cool.
They look really cool. I think it doesn't appear to be a huge time investment either. I gave it a 3 as well.
Yeah. I feel like one of these, I'm thinking like golf course. Like if it's something you're like, you know, one or two puffs on and you're throwing it on the ground to do your putt, or you're throwing it up at the tee box, you know, as you're teeing off. It's like, I could put it to something like that. Maybe one or two of these on a course where you're, you know, having a couple light beers or something like that. I could see that, but you know,
sure.
Maybe one on the front nine and one on the back nine, if anything.
Well, I wanted to say for any of our listeners, go to rogerup.org. That's Zach's website, his company's website. down at the very, very bottom. If you have any questions or want to help, they have a contact us. And there's a whole, and this, I appreciate this in terms of web design. They have a whole thing. What can we help you with? I'm in need of services. I want to support Roger up. I want to join the team. I want to volunteer. I have questions or other. And you can send a message there. They've got really sharp looking swag. They do have a donate option, which I've linked in the episode description. I've linked their website in the episode description as well. So if you want to find out more about them, you want to support or have other questions that we didn't answer on the show today, then feel free to reach out to them. They have a big support button at the top, so feel free to hit that and give them some support. And again, this episode is part of the 2015. No, no, not 2015. Dear God. The 2025. That's where we are now in history. The 2025.
We've gone back into time in the last hour. I knew it was going to happen. I feel younger.
We must have hit 88 miles per hour somewhere in there. But podcastthon.org. For more information, over 1,500 podcasts are participating in this. Maybe they're talking to a charity you're aware of or one that you want to hear about. And again, donate, ask questions to Roger Up, and thank you to Zach for being on. Thank you to Zach for your service for our country.
Thank you for thanking me, and thank you for having me, guys. It's been great chatting with you.
This was great. Thanks for listening.
Be safe. Have fun.